Hi there, I'm Seth Juarez, and this is the Microsoft Research Faculty Summit 2017, where the theme is the edge of AI, and I've got a special guest to talk about a really interesting project. So let's talk a little bit about the actual problem that you're working on, because I saw a demo of this, and I was absolutely floored by how amazing it was. Why don't you give us a little background on what it is this does?
Yeah, sure. So first, you know that the cancer is one of the biggest killers, right, in the world, and the incidence of cancer is just going up as people get older in the world, more and more people get cancer eventually. So one of the few ways to treat cancer is radiation therapy. And about half of cancer patients get radiation therapy. Radiation therapy is about using a special purpose-built machine that delivers ionizing radiation to a specific part of your body where the tumor is, or a patient's body where the tumor is, with the intent to kill the tumor cells or at least subside their growth. This radiation therapy, the planning of this treatment is powered by medical imaging. So what they do, essentially, they take a scan, a CT scan or MR scan, and they need to basically outline every organ that there is there to tell the machine what exactly needs to be treated. And I have a little video here, so if we kind of look at it, here's a radiation oncologist planning a treatment of a patient. So you can see that basically it's a very primitive tool. You just draw outlines, right? And then you switch to the next slice and you draw another outline. So, a medical image is multiple slices taken one after another. And that could be 300 slices or 200 slices. It's a very manual, very laborious process. And we built a tool that, helps save time, that takes this process from, between 30 and 40 minutes down to 5.
And this is interesting, right? Because when you're shooting this radiation at the tumor, you don't want to hit anything else because it's doing harm to the tumors. You don't want to do harm to the other things.
Exactly. That's why you don't only have to, delineate the tumor. You also want to delineate all the organs around the tumor. And in the end, you have to delineate up to 20, 30 different structures in one image, right? And some of the structures, like tumor, they're different between patients, but some of them are the same, right? So in the end, every radiation oncologist ends up contouring hundreds of the same, hip bones that look exactly the same between patients, but they still have to do that.
And that's 40 minutes of work for the radiation oncologist? Is this the actual doctor that's doing this?
It depends on the case, right? So brain tumors, they might take longer, prostate, they're also long, so some are simpler. Yeah, in some centers, the radiation oncologist, highly paid physicians doing that. In some centers, they have dosimetrists, which are people whose job is to do that. Yeah, but yes. It's an expensive thing to do, and usually it's physicians who do that instead of using the time that they might have used to talk to the
actually
patient.
Treat the patient. Yeah. I mean, 40 minutes of treating a patient is a lot different than effectively doing Photoshop on tons of slices of a diagram of what's inside the body, right? Yeah. So what does InnerEye actually do to help that, and how does AI help?
Yeah. So we basically our team. There is a team of researchers in our MSR Cambridge UK lab,
sure,
who worked on computer vision and image segmentation problems for many years. They contributed to Microsoft Kinect, and right now we are using same principles to build machine learning models that can actually detect, that can actually find those body parts for you in an image. Right. So this is our tool. This is the project that we're working on, and it looks like any other, medical imaging tools. You see all the standard components, the three cardinal planes. We have this 3D render in here. But this has this neat little button that says auto structure set. And this is something that none of the tools on the market currently have. And you can see that it allows you to select what kind of image are we looking at and what kind of structures are we looking at in this image. So right now I have a patient and a computer tomography scan of a patient with prostate cancer opened here. And when I press the start button, it kicks off the evaluation of our machine learning model, which has been trained on hundreds of images from participating institutions and hospitals that we work with. Mm-hmm. It has seen a lot of those contoured sets, and in just under a minute, probably, here you have the pretty accurate segmentation of a prostate cancer case, right? And this is not 100% correct. So some physicians would now look at that and say that, okay, so I don't like how this bladder is coming out here. So the yellow portion here is bladder, right? So probably click the edit button, and that would kind of fix it up a little bit. But you know, still, rather than doing it from scratch, you're just fixing up the works. The majority of work, 90%, is done by the AI.
So you've taken something that may have taken 40 minutes to an hour down to like maybe 5 or 6 minutes to make sure that it's okay.
Yeah, this is the hope, right? And again, you're fixing someone else's work as opposed to like creating same thing over and over again.
So this is pretty amazing, and it looks like you're able to also map into the 3D picture as well. Tell us about what we're looking at here.
Exactly. This is the 3D renderer. This is another kind of product that came out of our MSR Cambridge lab. Yeah, but it kind of renders the the data set in three dimensions, and you can actually look at the organs, right? And you can see how well it's
kind of. And that's what it's actually figured out from the pictures.
Yeah, that's what it figured out from the picture. So you can see the right hip bone, for example, here that was contoured by the automated algorithm. And you know, if you know much about anatomy, you say that it's pretty much accurate.
So let's talk about the AI that was involved in making this actually work.
Yeah.
Because it feels a little magical, but I want to, like, we're all, this is the faculty summit, right? We're talking about research.
Absolutely.
How did this happen? You said you mentioned a little bit about sort of the AI that was happening at Cambridge, like the Kinect stuff. Was some of that involved with this? Because it feels like the same kind of problem.
Yeah. So the Kinect project started way back when, right in the early 2000s, I think. And what they've done for Kinect, they were using machine learning models to solve a image segmentation problem.
Right.
So they were using three-dimensional data, right? They were using the flat image from the Kinect camera, plus they were using the depth information from the depth sensor to find body parts in the image, right? To tell that this is these voxels in this image probably belong to the left arm, and this is the right arm, and this is the head, and this is these are the legs. So you know, from in machine learning speak, this is a classification problem that we're on the classification algorithm on each voxel. So same guys who worked on this, so my boss Antonio Criminisi, who is a principal researcher on this project, he contributed to Kinect. So they took this idea further. Right, this idea is based on the concept of decision trees.
Uh-huh.
The algorithm has been improved significantly and has
Sure.
been tuned to fit this particular problem of medical image segmentation, but the core is kind of the same. So you have this decision tree, right, and the idea of decision tree that at each node, you train a very simple classifier that tries to maximize kind of the purity of the classes, right? So all the training points, all the voxels get into one node, and then you try to figure out to split them in two parts so that, you know, the voxels that probably belong to one kind of type of type of data goes to the left node and another goes to the right node, and that process happens over and over and over. And here down at the tree, you end up with having to split between like voxels that more likely belong to a bladder or voxels that more likely belong to a prostate. And at the very end, you have very pure classes. This is how kind of decision.
So what I remember the Kinect was certainly novel because, I mean, here I understand what decision trees are, and usually I'm more about, well, what's the feature selection that you use?
Yeah.
In the Kinect, they actually picked the point that you want to predict and picked the same set of points around it, not just with the actual image, but with the actual depth data, and those were the features. Is it similar in this case?
Yeah. So the feature selection process here is somewhat similar to Kinect. So in Kinect, what they used was they were looking at the current voxel, and they were randomly sampling a few points around this
right.
in a 3D cube around this voxel. So what we're doing here, we tried that, and we found right now, I think we're using just a full-fledged 3D convolutions. We're looking at all the voxels around them and kind of assigning weights to them. The tree is assigning weights to them. And we've taken this process a little bit further. So as opposed to doing this just based on the voxels around the current voxel, we also use cascades of decision trees, right? And in reality, we use decision forests, many trees,
right,
like
sure,
into
sure.
one. But the output of one forest serves as an input into another forest, right? So the forest downstream looks at the voxels, the voxel intensities, but also looks at the predictions from the previous forest. So it knows that, you know, this voxel to the left of it is something that looks like a right femur, to the right is something that looks like a left femur, right? And so probably this voxel is more likely to be a bladder because it's between something that looks like hips.
So let's talk about this, because this feels very similar to maybe something that would happen in a neural network, but more tree-like. Is it similar, different?
Yeah, you can say so. So, you know, these days everybody talks about deep learning, right? So what deep learning really is, you train multiple layers of network and layers kind of do different things a little bit, but you use the output of one layer as an input into your another layer, right? And in the end, you end up with kind of layer that use something very, very, some uses high-level features as an input,
sure,
input to it, right? As, like at the beginning, you might have been looking at just pixel voxel intensities, and the layers further to the end, you're looking at high-level things like nose, you know, if you're trying to classify human faces like nose, ears, eyes, things like that. So we're something similar is happening here. We're just not using neural nets. We're using decision trees, but we're using, multiple. Yeah, there are like cascades of those decision forests.
So let's talk a little bit about this this program that you built. Is this you use the word tomography? Did I get that right? Is it a tomography type program?
So tomography is a method of imaging human body, right? Mm-hmm. So there are like machines that use certain physical kind of phenomena to get an imaging of the human internals. There are several kinds of tomography. There is computed tomography. There is magnetic resonance tomography. Yeah. So our algorithm right now for this prostate scans works on computed tomography, but really kind of the underlying technique can work on any kind of 3D
I see,
image.
And that was the question, because what I was leading to is, tell me about the data set that you use in order to train this effectively. Because I'm assuming that, what was the size of your data set, for example? And then what kind of data? Because it looks like we focused on prostate cancer. Will this work to extrapolate other organs inside of the body?
Yeah, so actually working with the data set was ended up being more challenging and much more interesting than we thought it would be, because there is so much variation in how prostate cancer patients are imaged between different institutions. You would think, you know, just take a computed tomography, everyone looks like kind of the same, yeah, and go for it. Well, no, right? So one institution likes to image patients with contrast inside their bladder. Another institution would implant something in there, right? Somebody else would use some additional like contraptions that would that would fixate like a patient in one place. A lot of effort went into generalizing between the different ways how different institutions kind of image their patients. But the underlying technique, like I said, it's a classification problem that looks at individual voxels. It doesn't really care whether it's a computed tomography or magnetic resonance tomography, or whether it's a functional MRI or a PET scan, right? So it would look at it would work with any kind of 3D image data. And moreover, so that's one of the benefits, one of the reasons why we're using decision tree as opposed to like neural nets, it can use multiple input layers, because like for brain cancer patients, they usually take different kinds of MR scans with different settings. Like there's like T1 sure. GAD with contrast injection, then there is a flare with that looks at, and they all look at different aspects, like different clinical characteristics of the tumor. And usually a physician looks at multiple of those scans. So this kind of algorithm can use multiple channels, actually. It can look at multiple kinds of images, and it can kind of predict based on that. But what's interesting is if you, for example, trained it to look on three kinds of MR scans, but you only have one at the time of scan, it would still work because of the kind of nature of the
So were you using the three different kinds of scans? And the reason why I'm asking, because this is super interesting in terms of the data, yeah, that you were using and the algorithms you're using, were you using all three of the scans to do the training? But because it had all three scans, it inferred well enough to be able to just use one of them?
Yeah. So because it's a decision tree, right? If you don't have, and just for clarity, so what I've just shown, the prostate case, we only use one type of scanner. We don't use this multilayer, but this is something that has been done in research. But theoretically, in this technique, if you trained it on three layers, like three types of MRI, and you only have one, it'll just use the part of the tree that, you know, that has to do with this one MR, one MRI, right? So the other branches of the tree just won't be used. Voxels won't go there.
What if you have one of these kinds of scans and you don't, for example, because it looks like you had a specific prostate set, you might have a set of other sets. What if they just want to go in color? Because I remember like in Photoshop, there's this like magic wand tool. Could this, to like select the right area, is there a way to do that with this program as well? Do you get what I'm asking?
Yeah. So this program, we wanted to build this program. We didn't want to build, you know, an abstract kind of researchy tool that only does one thing well, which is not practical at all,
sure,
right? We wanted to build something practical. And we built in a lot of more conventional tools that people would use. And I can show you here like a quick demo, for example. This is a patient, this is a different patient. So this is not a prostate scan anymore. This is a scan of the thorax, so the of your chest part. And this is a patient with, this patient has been injected with contrast dye. So you can see this kind of huge white spot in the middle. This is the aorta with contrast injected in it. And let me try to contour the aorta here. So you can see I'm using kind of a very natural tool, this pen, and I just, you know, draw a contour around this slice. And normally, you know, the radiation oncologist would switch to next slice.
For every
next
slice,
one.
Every
slice. So I won't do that. I will just skip through, skip over a few hundred slices and go to the point where aorta splits. So, you know, you can see the two white blobs here, but trust me, those are, this is the place where aorta splits into left and right femoral arteries. So let me draw the contour around those. Right. And you can see that right now the algorithm had run an interpolation, you know, our own interpolation algorithm had run, and it has contoured the aorta. You can see it's not like 100% precise. It captured some of the vertebrae here. So I can click there, all right, and I can use my pen to fix this slice up. And I'll just delete all this vertebrae artifacts and probably part of the kidney that it grabbed here. And just now, the algorithm, which was, again, developed in our Cambridge lab, it ran the interpolation in three dimensions across, 208 slices here. And we have a pretty accurate segmentation of the, you know, the main blood vessel in this patient. So we have tools like that, which allow the physicians, you know, to do the entire contouring workflow within a tool.
And that's quite remarkable, because there may be a situation where there is a type of cancer that hasn't been trained on.
Yeah,
where you can go ahead and do this kind of technique inside of these scans.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And in the end, right, we don't say that this technology is supposed to replace kind of the radiation oncologists and do all their job
for
them.
It's just a fast start.
No, yeah, it's a fast start. And in many cases, they would want to contour more things that, you know, here we have the seven organs like bladder, femurs, prostate, but probably they would contour another like 5 or 10. They would want to do several kind of several volumes around the tumor itself, because they want to treat a little bit larger region than the tumor, than the actual tumor. They might want to contour like in a portion of the liver that gets into there, or something like that.
And this is using the same machine learning techniques from before, but to do extrapolation. Is that right?
No, no. What I was just talking about is that they, you know, they would use the simpler tools, like the one that I've shown you now, that using this interpolation to contour the organs that machine learning had not seen.
I see.
Right. So the algorithm that we use, technically, it's not machine learning.
Yeah, it feels like it'd be like a search of some kind.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, it's solving the minimization problem. So, so in a sense, it is machine learning, but it runs locally. There is no like this train test phase.
I see.
It just optimizes kind of the path between.
And that's, I mean, it's pretty amazing, because now you're taking someone that's having obviously a very bad time, they have cancer, and you're minimizing the amount of useless work that a trained a physician or someone in the medical community has to do, and they can focus now on the care of the actual patient.
Yeah, exactly. This is the promise here, because we believe, we call this assistive AI, as opposed to, you know, AI that's kind of replace all radiologists. Because right now, there is this kind of buzz, in the, especially in medical community, that, you know, AI is coming, it's going to replace all radiologists, radiologists will go out of a job.
Yeah.
So people are really, like, apprehensive, you know, they are scared of this advent of AI. And we think that it doesn't have to be like that, because first, humans are pretty good at diagnosing, right? Mm-hmm. So right now there are a lot of startups and a lot of companies out there working on developing AI that will kind of diagnose cancer based on medical image. Well, it might be useful, but really, like, you know, experienced radiologists will diagnose cancer based on medical image like in a few seconds, right? You don't need to really have AI for that.
So this is amazing stuff. Just to finish up, what's next for Project NRI?
There are plenty of things that that this kind of technology can unlock. There is this whole field of quantitative radiology, and surprisingly, this whole kind of medical imaging area has been underserved by AI. There aren't really good tools that help physicians become better and help them spend more time with patients. So, you know, you can track tumor progression over time. You can do things like adaptive radiation therapy, where, you know, an AI system would actually look at how tumor responds to a radiation treatment in real time between sessions and would adjust the treatment based on that, as opposed, because because right now they build one plan, the one that I've shown you, and they use that plan pretty much unchanged through multiple sessions of therapy, right? And tumor obviously changes. So, you know, a lot of things that we can do to improve the
outcomes. This is amazing stuff. And the thing I like about it most is that we can do a lot with computer vision. We can match images and we can sort images, you know? This is probably one of the best applications of computer vision that I've seen because, I mean, it goes to the heart of our humanity in curing cancer.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for spending some time with us, Ivan.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for watching. We will see you next time. Take care.